Chapter 20.
I could get used to this, Joff said.
Greer gave him a sideways glance as she brought their ancient Y-wing into orbit around the space station.
Running around under assumed names? Not telling anyone where we're really going? Following orders Princess Leia might not actually have the legal authority to give?
Exactly.
He folded his hands behind his head as he leaned back in the chair, his thick golden hair the least convincing halo imaginable. Sometimes, despite his youth and sunny disposition, Joff Seastriker's yen for trouble made him come across more like a potential smuggler than a New Republic pilot.
You still crave excitement.
Greer shook her head as she began signaling for a docking berth.
Wait until you get some.
Come on! We're on a secret mission! We've already saved the princess from kidnapping once, and I even rigged a mobster's satellites! That absolutely 100% counts as excitement. His blue eyes narrowed, momentarily less innocent, more searching.
You know, there's something I don't get. At this point, you've proved 1,000 times that you don't like playing it safe. So why do you keep pretending that you do?
Greer remembered the day she'd walked away from her racer. The way Han Solo's hands had closed over hers as he said a gruff goodbye to her that would allow them both to pretend there weren't tears in her eyes.
You're still a kid, aren't you? You still think recklessness is a virtue, or that you can only prove you're brave by risking your life. Staying alive as long as you can to do some good in this world.
The word caught in her throat, but she pushed on.
That's not playing it safe. That's our job.
Joff sat up, suddenly serious, his expression gentler than she'd known it could be. He'd finally glimpsed some shadow of the truth she'd tried so hard to hide.
Hey, if there's something I ought to know, or something we need to talk about, whatever, you know you can tell me, right?
There's nothing worth telling.
A green light on the console began flashing. Docking clearance granted.
Let's go in,
Greer said, focusing on the task at hand and, she hoped, changing the subject. She and Joff had scrounged up the cheapest used ship they could find, one so battered that buying it was less expensive than renting anything else. Greer thought it might have been banged up in the Clone Wars and patched back into service every few years since. Any two young pilots flying around in a ship this rickety would obviously be hungry for work of any kind at any price. When they'd gone to Pamarth, they'd wanted to come across as pilots looking for a job. Now they needed to actually get a job, one that would take them to Cybensko. Space stations generally served as military outposts and had for generations. Some planets kept their own civilian stations operational, primarily for the use of pleasure craft. But this station, adrift in deep space, was unique. Abandoned by asteroid miners more than a century earlier, it had been taken over by smugglers, slavers, and others who valued a place to do business where no planetary laws applied. Any repairs and updates to the station had been undertaken by individual spice runners and low-life pilots, when and if these individuals happened to notice something that required fixing, when and if they had the time, money, and inclination to actually do something about it. As such, the space station Chrome Citadel looked like it might fall apart at any second. The various repairs appeared to have been piecemeal at best. Chrome Citadel's rough, conical hull had been patched with different shades and types of metal, its namesake shiny surface long since buried beneath layers of duller stuff, and many sensors that would normally be shielded within station atmosphere had instead simply been bolted on wherever they would fit. Although the work was inconsistent and shoddy, it had somehow been enough to keep the thing going despite its dilapidation.
Only desperate people would come here,
Greer thought as she brought their ship in for docking.
Anyone else would stay far away.
Joff looked askance at a particularly dodgy piece of patchwork near one of the main vents.
Are we sure about the atmospheric controls in there? Because this thing seems like it might vent all its air any second.
Greer shrugged.
Only one way to find out.
Inside the Chrome Citadel, Chaos ruled. As Joff and Greer walked from their docking port, they merged with the busy foot traffic of a few dozen species, each one a pilot or a trader, several of them familiar from wanted hollows in respectable spaceports, most of them probably very dangerous. Every corridor was lined with makeshift stalls selling everything from dehydrated deep space rations to fashionable headscarves. Greer bought a red one and knotted it around her thick black hair as she saw some of the bush pilots do. While both she and Joff had worn loose, rumpled coveralls, they still looked too tidy and respectable for the rough crew in this place. Joff also had noticed that they stuck out, and they quickly stopped at one of the nearest stalls.
"What do you think they'd do if they knew?"
he murmured as he strapped on the leather tool harness he'd just bought. After taking a long look at the motley crowd of humans and non-humans, every one of them armed, Greer said,
"If they knew, we'd be thrown out of the nearest airlock."
He nodded toward one farther down the corridor, which looked as though it had been painted and enameled over dozens of times since it was last opened.
"At least it looks like most of the airlocks don't work."
Greer sighed.
"We've got that going for us, then."
A group of Otegans swaggered past, smelling faintly of spice. Humans with their red hair plaited in ropes bickered with a droid shopkeeper about the cost of a new welding torch. A Hask woman kept her furred hand on her blaster, eyes darting toward every passage and corner, never relaxing her guard for a moment.
"Hey,"
Joff murmured, nudging Greer's shoulder.
"Check that out."
She followed his gaze toward a stall near the far curve of this corridor. Amid the booths hawking flasks of counterfeit Corellian brandy and scan-proof shipping containers was one that sold decorative trinkets. Flags, hollow cubes, good luck charms, decals and such. And hanging amid the flags, front and center, was the banner of the Empire. Other Imperial emblems showed up as well. A hollow of a benevolently smiling Palpatine, taken from some old propaganda message, and decals in the shape of the Imperial insignia. But they were only a handful of the items on display, crowded in among popular characters from hollow comedies or galactic folklore, colorful abstract patterns, and even the insignias of the New Republic and the old Rebel Alliance. Greer tried to put things in perspective.
"They're kitsch. The stuff our parents and grandparents owned, so people buy them ironically. More a joke than anything else."
"I don't know."
Joff shook his head.
"It makes the Empire look like something out of a story. Something that wasn't real. If you ask me, buying stuff like that and showing it off like it's no big deal, it disrespects the old Rebel pilots, you know? They went up against the Death Stars in X-Wings. And we're repaying them by treating Palpatine like he was only a boogeyman out of a kid's story?"
On most worlds, the seediest cantina was where the most lucrative, least legal jobs were to be found. On the Chrome Citadel, the cantina was nearly the one place people didn't seek work. It was only for drinking, dancing, and checking the room for any member of the genders and species you found attractive. Work was instead traded openly at the station's highest point, the tip of the cone, via an open message market.
"Look sharp,"
Greer murmured, as she and Joff walked into the room, where various electronic display boards shone with rapidly scrolling messages, rows and rows of them, each promising work at a certain level of pay. Pilots crowded around, standing near small, waist-height consoles with quick key and controls. Greer remembered these from some of the less upright areas of Pomarth, where people sought her homeworld's famously daring flyers.
"These jobs go to whoever punches in fastest."
Joff frowned.
"Who'd post work here instead of vetting the pilots themselves? This is supposed to be sensitive stuff, right? The kind of things you don't want to get caught doing?"
"Exactly."
She kept her eyes focused on the board, scanning as many messages simultaneously as possible.
"The kind of thing you don't want to get caught hiring people for. Much more likely to be illegal than anything they'd advertise for on Pomarth. Message rooms like this transfer the risk to the pilots, which pretty much guarantees the work here is the most dangerous of all.
In other words, precisely where they were likely to find work connected to Arlys Hadrasian, Rinriven Dai, or the Amaxine warriors.
Live cargo to Nal Hutta, no questions asked. That would be a call for a slaver. Greer's lip curled in disgust. 200 kilos GS from Care of Doi to Tatooine. No doubt GS stood for Glitterstim. Bounty announced for live capture of smuggler in arrears. Identity and images of quarry on acceptance only.
Bounty hunters too? Greer shuddered.
Joff's hand shot past her to hit the console, tagging one of the jobs. Only as the message faded from the scrolling screens and appeared on the console in front of them did she see its words. Transport materiel from Daxam 4 to Sibensko. Discretion valued.
Quick eye, she said to Joff.
Thanks. He was trying hard not to sound too proud of himself, and failing. The console's glow shifted to red as another message appeared at the bottom of their screen. Accept or decline to re-release job. Swiftly, Greer hit the button that said accept. After hours of debate at the populist meeting that night, most of which had been spent blaming the centrist ministers for the napkin bombing with much invective and little proof, Leia had a headache, a prickly temper, and a strong desire to do nothing more strenuous than laying her head on her pillow. But just after she'd changed into her nightgown, the very moment she reached for her bed covers to pull them back, her comm unit blinked with a new message. She thought maybe it would be from Han, but instead found the message was encoded. After C-3PO had been roused from his recharging station and translated it for her, whatever disappointment Leia felt at not hearing from her husband had evaporated in a blaze of excitement. "We couldn't have asked for anything better," she said as she paced the floor of her main room, the long hem of her nightgown swirling around her feet. "This gives us a direct link between Daxam 4 and Sibensko."
"Yes, Your Highness,"
C-3PO, ever eager to please, had to serve as sounding board.
"Do you think Mistress Sonnel and Lieutenant Seastriker will be taking on cargo that is, shall we say, incriminating?"
The job specified materiel. That almost always means armaments, explosives, items necessary for military action. Leia paused, thumping her hand against the back of her long sofa. It's possible the work may be entirely legal. The Amaxine warriors might be hiring like this only because they hope to keep this secret. Still, it doesn't matter. We don't need to catch them committing a crime. At least not yet. We only need to get ourselves into Sibensko, and this job should do that.
"I beg your pardon, Your Highness, but it sounds as if..."
C-3PO's pause was broken only by the sound of his internal gears whirring as he turned toward her.
"Why, rather as if you intended to accompany Mistress Sonnel and Lieutenant Seastriker on their mission."
Leia hadn't realized that, hadn't consciously made a decision one way or the other, and had hardly even acknowledged there was a decision to be made. Yet the droid's programming analyzed human conversation so thoroughly that he sometimes pointed out subtleties she'd missed. "I guess it does sound like that," she said slowly. "I guess I do."
"But Princess Leia!"
C-3PO's voice rose in alarm.
"You can't! The mission sounds terribly dangerous."
3PO, in the quarter century you've served me, have you ever known me to run away from danger?"
"Well, no."
The droid considered this a moment before adding hopefully,
"Yet you might eventually develop a stronger instinct for survival."
Leia couldn't help laughing. "Don't count on it." C-3PO never thought faster than when he was trying to keep himself out of the latest round of trouble.
"Captain Solo would no doubt be highly concerned."
"Captain Solo once piloted us into an asteroid field, remember? He doesn't get to lecture anyone on taking risks. Anyway, I outrank him."
"But you cannot leave Hosnian Prime at this point in the political process. Your candidacy will be officially announced within a few weeks. Then your presence within the Galactic Senate will be crucial." Surely there will be appearances to coordinate on other worlds as well.
He had a point. Once she became an official candidate, the demands on Leia's time would increase exponentially. She would be expected to give speeches on planets from the galactic core to the expansion region. Broadcasters would clamor for interviews. Greer would have to schedule studio time for holos to be distributed galaxy-wide, showing Leia speaking about her policy proposals. Above all, she'd need to be active in the Senate, demonstrating that she was engaged, dynamic, and committed. In other words, as soon as she became a candidate, Leia would have time for nothing else. Especially not secret missions that might take down what looked likely to be the biggest spice cartel in the galaxy. She shut her eyes and took a deep breath. You're right. As soon as my nomination as first senator becomes official, I won't have time for this. C-3PO practically preened.
I am glad to have been of service.
Which is why we have to get to Cybensko before the announcement.
Oh, no! If you'll pardon me for saying so, Your Highness, won't any absence from the Senate be seen as a potential lack of commitment? Appearances are so important.
She shook her head. I've given my life to duty since I was 14 years old. Anyone who doubts my commitment at this point is a fool whose opinion I can safely ignore.
Of course, Your Highness.
So my trip to Cybensko is on. C-3PO paused again.
This means danger, doesn't it?
You'd better believe it. Leia flopped down on her sofa, smiling. Bring up my calendars, will you? I want to start thinking about the best time to do this. Shuffling toward the nearest information bank, C-3PO wistfully said,
It's enough to make one wish to go back to programming binary loadlifters.
The duel on Daxum 4 had gone well, but it had also reminded Ransom Casterfo that he had to keep his skills sharp. Since it appeared he had a use for this sort of thing even now that he was a senator, he didn't intend to let himself get rusty. In the stark white training chamber, he remained stock still, poised with the quarterstaff in his hand. His form-fitting gray workout gear had been drenched with sweat for a long time now, but Ransom remained determined to press on. Most people neglected training with non-powered weapons. These were the same people who got themselves killed because their blasters ran out of charge. He intended to be able to fight with whatever was at hand, whether as sophisticated as the latest model of vibroblade or as brutish as a long stick. The projectors in the corners of the training chamber shimmered, creating the illusion of a Mandalorian warrior with a blaster in his hand. Instantly, Ransom swung upward, striking the blaster's muzzle with his quarterstaff. The holographic bolts shot uselessly over Ransom's head. Although the pre-programmed Mandalorian attempted to compensate, skidding back into a crouch, Ransom was ready for him. With one savage thrust, he plunged the end of the quarterstaff through the Mandalorian's head, even faster than the man would have been able to fire. The hollow shimmered into nothingness. Ransom smiled. He'd won again. After another few rounds, once his muscles were quivering and his empty belly demanded food, Ransom finally headed back to his quarters. A swift ride on the border monorail took him to his apartment, which was a fairly humble one by senatorial standards. But what was the point in spending a lot of money on a place where he lived alone, and that he used only to sleep? His was a bachelor apartment, with utilitarian furnishings that had come with the place, in a combination of the gray and orange colors so in vogue at the moment as to be completely generic. Stashing his quarterstaff in his equipment closet, Ransom began settling in for the evening. He rubbed his sweat-damp hair with a towel, slung that around his neck, and began searching through the kitchen to see whether anything edible remained. His comm unit blinked. Someone was calling. Ransom quickly went to the unit to answer. As he hit the panel, a hollow of Princess Leia took shape within his living room.
Leia?
He smiled as he sat heavily on his sofa, spreading his weary arms across the back. To what do I owe the honor?
It's rather late for a social call. Her lips quirked, evidence of the excitement she was trying to hold back.
Would you consider an invitation to Cybensko social?
You're joking, he breathed. However did Greer and Joff manage it?
They went to the right place, snagged the right job. They'll be transporting materiel. Schedule is somewhat flexible, it seems, but they'll need to act soon.
Outstanding.
I intend to go with them.
She grinned at Ransom then in unconcealed anticipation. In that moment, it occurred to him that in her zeal, she'd contacted him wearing only a house coat tossed over her nightgown. How the gossips would talk if they knew he and Leia spoke like this late in the evening. But gossips were fools, and Ransom valued her lack of artifice. Leia hadn't held the truth back from him for a moment. After his first flush of enthusiasm, however, came doubt. I hesitate to point this out, Leia, but our first mission to Bastatha was fully endorsed by the Senate. Our work on Ryloth, Harloth Minor, and Daxam IV was either authorized or technically unofficial and entirely legal.
True,
Leia said with an eloquent shrug.
Anyone can have a dinner guest on Harloth Minor. Anyone can buy a Royal Guard helmet if he wants.
Ransom gave her a look. But using New Republic pilots and ships to take on potentially illegal work, traveling to a world known for criminal activity under what I assume will be false identification, you may well be overstepping your authority as a senator. She remained unfazed.
That's also true.
I feel the need to point out that such a mission will no doubt be extremely dangerous.
I can't deny it.
Ransom leaned closer to his comm unit. I want in. Leia's smile would have turned the night to day.
You know, I had a funny feeling you were going to say that.
You know me so well. She became more serious then.
If by some chance you hadn't offered, I would have asked you along. If a populist senator on her own went out of bounds and came back with proof of a conspiracy based on centrist worlds, at best I'd be laughed off the Senate floor. At worst, I'd be censured. In either case, no one would believe me. But your presence on the mission gives us credibility. If we're able to prove the connections I think this trip to Cybensko will prove, and you and I present our evidence to the Senate together, we might just have a chance to make them listen.
We will, Ransom said. I'm sure of it. Leia raised an eyebrow.
You have more confidence in the Galactic Senate than I do.
Sometimes she sounded so jaded, so cynical, even though she had been an idealistic revolutionary in her youth. Maybe a quarter century of politics did that to a person. At least, politics the way it had always been played in the New Republic. Ransom Casterfo intended to change the game.